Good evening, everyone. I'm Lynn Ormudu. Welcome to Health Chat. How well are your kidneys? Did you know that kidney disease affects millions of people worldwide? Well, the kidneys are two bean-shaped organs that extract waste from blood, balance body fluids, form urine, and aid in other important functions of the body. Many forms of kidney disease do not produce symptoms until late in the course of the disease, so it is important to pay attention to your body and talk to your doctor as soon as you notice something unusual, such as making more or less urine than usual. There are also other signs to look for, and on the show today we will discuss the kidneys and look at kidney transplant as well. Joining us via phone from New Jersey for more is Iya Bekondo, founder and CEO of the Iya Foundation. Iya is also a recipient of kidney transplant. Ms. Bekondo, welcome to Africa 54.
Thank you, Ms. Linod. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. Also joining us via phone from New Jersey is nephrologist Dr. Andrew Badu. Dr. Badu, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us. Let me remind our listeners that if you would like to participate in the program today with your question or comment, you can email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com or post them on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And we will start our discussion shortly. But first, VOA's Kati Matinye takes a look at kidney transplant in Kenya.
It's one of six kidney transplants done by the Spanish-Kenyan team in mid-March at Kenya's largest public health facility, Kenyatta National Hospital. Lead surgeon Dr. Antonio Alcaraz instructs fellow surgeons and students watching the procedure through closed-circuit television. Meanwhile, 25-year-old Caroline Kinyanjui is recovering from her surgery earlier in the week. She donated one of her kidneys to her father, Peter Kibe, who is suffering from hypertension.
I love my dad. He's poured quite a lot of his life into me by, you know, just bringing me up in a very sober way and taking care of me. I know he would do the same if I was in that position. So I was purely driven by love and understanding that I can still live a normal life after this.
Kenya's first kidney transplant took place in 1978, but the procedure was not regularly available until 10 years later. Kenyatta National Hospital did only two last year. At the same time, skyrocketing rates of kidney failure, caused by diseases such as diabetes and hypertension, make it urgent to offer more and more sophisticated transplants. And that is where the Spanish team comes in. Towards the end of last year, Kenyatta National Hospital and the drug company Novartis formed a partnership called Interlife and invited doctors from the Hospital Clinic de Barcelona to train Kenyan doctors on new transplant techniques. Lead surgeon Dr. Antonio Alcaraz is head of the Barcelona Hospital's renal unit.
When we first came here, we saw that there were a few facilities to undertake a very important program, a sophisticated one, like can be a living donor program. So on this case, but we thought it was enough, and we were especially impressed by the commitment of people, of doctors and nurses, in trying to develop that program. So we said we will accept the challenge of starting or raising up this program in Kenya.
While an estimated 1 million Kenyans suffer from kidney disease, dialysis and transplants to battle the condition are limited and expensive. In the public healthcare system, for example, only two hospitals are equipped with dialysis machines, which remove impurities from the blood when the kidneys cannot do it. One of those is Kenyatta National Hospital, where almost 150 patients need dialysis, but the hospital's dialysis machines can only handle 35 patients per week. And the minimum cost of dialysis, $117 a week, is virtually unaffordable for low-income patients, even though it is a subsidized rate. The Interlife partnership is now able to offer a kidney transplant and follow-up treatment for around $4,550, about half of what it used to be. The drug company Novartis is supplying the necessary drugs at not-for-profit prices. Health officials say a transplant is now cheaper in the long run than continued dialysis sessions. Dr. Patrick Mbugua says Kenyans no longer need to go to India or other places to get their kidney transplants.
And that was Kati Machine reporting. Dr. Badu, let me come to you, have your reaction. We saw that in Kenya they're making efforts for kidney transplantation. First of all, when we get to the stage of kidney transplant, it means there is no more options, right, when it comes to addressing kidney disease? Is that correct?
Well, not necessarily there's no options. I mean, there's no options in terms of the actual function of the kidney, but the options always is that when the patient reaches what we call end-stage renal disease, you either go on dialysis or you could get a kidney transplant. You know, kidney transplant sometimes is hard to come by, either because the organ is not available or financially the patient may not be able to afford it. So the modality available to them may be dialysis.
Okay. And kidney transplantation is something that, you went through several years ago. You were diagnosed with kidney disease at the age of 7. Can you tell us how this happened?
Yeah, at the age of 7, I developed some minimal symptoms, which was pretty much edema in my face, puffiness, as well as in my stomach and in my ankles. My mom is a registered nurse, now retired, but she was active at the time, and so she picked up quickly on these symptoms. They were very minimal, I have to say. And so she decided that she would get me tested for why I was developing such symptoms. And I was diagnosed with nephrotic syndrome at the time.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened? You went under treatment? Did you undergo dialysis?
Not immediately. I was in the early stages of kidney disease, so I was managed with steroids, and that lasted for about 10 years, and proper dieting as well. I was on a very strict low-sodium diet, and so it was after 10 years that I started developing severe symptoms, and I had to go on dialysis at the time.
Okay. So, Dr. Badu, when someone like Ia is diagnosed and it's at an early stage, is there a way to block the process from getting worse? Because obviously she was put on a diet and she did what she was told to do, but then it got worse. So is there a way to not get to that stage?
Yes, but it all is predicated on the fact of what the actual etiology of the renal failure is. You know, with ES per se, it depends on what caused her renal failure. In her age and being so young, it may have been a disease called minimal chain disease. And a lot of times, some of the therapy available is very expensive. And she may not have been able to exactly, I guess, afford the cost at that time. And that's what we see a lot of time in the third world countries, that the therapy is available, but because it's cost prohibitive, sometimes people cannot afford it. So eventually you see a progression of the kidney disease to what we call chronic kidney disease, where mm-hmm. eventually it will get to be end stage, either transplant or needing dialysis.
So let's talk about the earliest signs of kidney disease. When should a patient be concerned?
Well, you know, like it was noted in the beginning, kidney disease is one of those things that, unfortunately, you don't tend to have early symptoms. Some of the symptoms that you may have maybe also analogous to other diseases. So, as mentioned, you may get some puffiness, some edema, which is just swelling. You may notice that your blood pressure is slowly increasing. You may notice that you may be feeling more fatigue. You may be losing interest in what you'd like to do or in terms of taste of food. But the only really way to diagnose kidney disease is by blood tests. And either by urine tests, where your physician may note that you're losing protein in the urine, which is usually like an early sign of kidney disease. Mm-hmm. And then later on, the blood test may show an elevation in what we call creatinine, which is a compound in the blood. And elevation of that will indicate that the kidney is not working at its optimal level. And that may be an indication for the physician to further investigate and see what's going on.
Okay. So there is a way to at least tell that if there is something wrong with the kidney through blood tests, urine tests.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, Iya, let's come to you and move forward 10 years when your disease was at an advanced stage. What happened?
So I was in Cameroon at the time, and this was about 1999, and I started developing very severe symptoms. I was cramping. I had a metallic taste in my mouth. I was extremely tired at all times of the day. I was very, very sick. So my family, my mom and my sisters, decided that it was best that I travel abroad to get better treatment. And that was when I migrated to the United States. Upon arrival to the United States, within a month of being here, I was diagnosed with complete renal failure. And that was when I needed to go on dialysis right away. My blood pressure was skyrocketed. I was at like 140 over like 90. So I was very, very sick. And I actually had passed out and found myself in the hospital with a catheter for dialysis.
And that's how long did you how long did you stay on dialysis?
I was on dialysis for approximately 5 years. I started with peritoneal dialysis, which is the home dialysis. I would do that every day, overnight, and I did it for about 2 years on my own, and that for about 2.5 years. And then I got an infection. I got peritonitis. And my catheter couldn't be retrieved, so I had to change. I had to switch to the in-center dialysis. I had to go on hemodialysis, and I did that for another 2+ years before I got my transplant.
So, Dr. Badu, you mentioned that transplantation is an option at the end stage of kidney disease. It's either dialysis or transplantation, if I understand correctly.
That's correct.
Okay. So if someone doesn't have an organ, as you mentioned, it might be challenging to get an organ. How long can someone stay on dialysis for how long? Can you do that for the rest of your life, or at some point you will need a transplant?
Ideally, I mean, for the quality of life, transplant is always the best option. Mm-hmm. But, you know, over the years, people have been on dialysis, and with the advancement in dialysis therapy, we've been able to see people live, you know, 15, 20 years, 25 years on dialysis. Mm-hmm. So dialysis therapy has gotten a lot better. Mm-hmm. But you know, ideally, because of the quality of life, transplant is always the best route to go.
So can you explain to us what is dialysis? Because we hear this term, we know it has something to do with helping the kidney, but what is it exactly?
Dialysis is basically in its simplest form, meaning that the blood is being cleaned. And what happens with kidney failure is that normally, as we sit in here, all of us have presumably normal kidney functions. Your kidneys is basically filtering your blood and removing all the impurities out of your system, and it's been eliminated through the urine. And that's essentially what we do with dialysis, where a person goes to either a facility, a clinic, or they may be, if they do peritoneal dialysis, and I'll come back to explain what the difference are. But essentially, the blood is being cleaned. Your own blood is being removed out of the system. It's being processed through a filter. And through the filter, the poisons are being removed, and then your own blood is being given back to you again.
Okay, and Iya said that she did hers in the beginning every day. Is it what it takes every day?
Well, she did peritoneal dialysis, and you know what I just described is essentially hemodialysis. But there's two types of dialysis. That's okay. What we call hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis. Now, with the hemodialysis, you go to a center and you get dialyzed. You know, in this country, 3 times a week. In some parts of Europe, they do it every day. Mm-hmm. In some parts of Africa, where because of the cost, some people cannot afford to go 3 times a day or every day, so they do it maybe 2x a week. Mm-hmm. So that's hemodialysis, and that is done where either a catheter will place in your chest or in your leg, and that becomes a modality for them to be able to draw your blood, clean it through a filter, and return your blood back to you. Now, that usually is done as a bridge before what we call a fistula is created. A fistula basically becomes like an IV access, a modality for us to draw the blood. They take your own vein and your own blood vessel, your own artery, and try to allow it to mature, and that becomes the point of access for us to draw your blood. And that's usually done in a subcutaneous area. Okay. Now, with the peritoneal dialysis, we use your abdominal cavity as the medium for dialysis. In the abdominal cavity, you have your intestines, and each of them have small blood vessels that surround it. So essentially what we do is we instill a catheter, and the catheter will allow us to pour, sugar water or dextrose water into your abdomen, and that would essentially would bathe your intestinal wall, and through diffusion osmosis, remove your the poisons out of your body and drain it out, and that becomes a daily process.
Okay. Dr. Badu and Iya, we will take a very short break and continue this discussion. We also have a couple of questions from our listeners, so we'll have those for you in just a short while. We'll be right back, but first, here are some tips on maintaining a healthy kidneys.
Are your kidneys in good shape? Kidneys are organs that remove waste products from the body by filtering them from the blood. Kidney diseases are a silent killer that can affect your quality of life. Here are some tips to reduce the risk of developing kidney disease. Maintain a healthy fluid intake. Eat a healthy diet. Maintain a healthy weight. Stay fit and active. Monitor your blood pressure. Do not smoke. Keep regular control of your blood sugar level. Be careful about your salt intake. Cut down on processed food. And that is how you treat your kidneys right.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you are listening to Health Chat. And my guest today, Iya Bekando, founder and CEO of the Iya Foundation and a recipient of kidney transplant. And we also are joined by Dr. Badu. He's a nephrologist in New Jersey. Now, Dr. Badu, I have this question from Cisse in Sierra Leone. He says, I have diabetes, and I was told diabetes leads to kidney failure. Will my kidneys fail?
Well, diabetes is one of the most common causes of kidney failure, especially when it's not well controlled. So just by the fact of having diabetes does not necessarily mean that you're going to end up having kidney failure. But if you take good care of yourself, adhere to your strict diet, and be compliant with your medications, the chances of you developing kidney failure is very minimal.
Okay. Iya, we have this question from Mary in Ghana. She says, finding a kidney is very difficult in Ghana. You received kidney transplant. How were you able to find an organ? And we were going to get to this point, actually, about your experience with transplantation. So please take it away, Iya.
Sure. My family was tested when it was decided that I would need a kidney transplant. And after a series of blood works and lab works, it was decided that my mom was the most fit for me. And so my mom was a willing donor in my case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Dr. Badu, how challenging in general is it to find the right match, to find even donors? Because it seems like people are not very much aware of this.
Well, kidney transplantation has evolved to a great extent. The biggest obstacle that we see nowadays is finding the right donors. The match is not really a big issue, and the reason I say that is because there's other ways of getting around that, the matching process. But the biggest issue is getting people willing to donate, and it really has to do with education. You know, and we have that problem a lot of time, mostly in the black community, you know, and we're not really sure if it's based on religious beliefs or culture beliefs, but a lot of people in the black communities really do not or are not willing to donate. So because of that, there's a shortage of organ transplantation or shortage of organs for transplantation. As Ia mentioned, the best route to really go is through families. If that is not an option or if there's not a match, then there's, in this country, what we do in the U.S. Is we have what we call a match process where if, let's say, you have there's other couples who are also in the same situation, but they do not match each other, mm-hmm. but they have a willing partner who wants to give a kidney, they could donate their kidney to somebody else who is willing to receive a kidney, and they will match you with another person. And so that way you could have a transplantation process happen between four different individual people. And that seems to have helped a lot of people get off dialysis and deal with their kidney issues.
Okay. Okay. Now Chinedu is asking, can I catch a kidney disease from someone who has it?
The answer is no.
Okay.
It's not a contagious disease.
Okay. Okay. Now, Ia, let me ask you, how is your mother? She's the one who gave you her organ. So how is she doing? Is she complaining of any issues?
No. My mom is complaining of nothing. She's perfectly healthy. Well, let me rephrase that. She's complaining of nothing that's kidney-related or as a result of her being a kidney donor. She has okay. normal issues like arthritis here and there, but her health is perfectly okay.
Okay. Because, Dr. Badu, I think some people are afraid of giving an organ because they feel like, you know, if it's there, it means I need it. So they're afraid of getting sick.
And that's correct. But to be honest with you, we could actually live with one kidney.
Mm.
And you could survive very well with one kidney.
Okay. Okay. Now, Ia, you have the Ia Foundation, which is trying to help people in the community with kidney disease issues. Tell us about that.
Yes, the Ia Foundation is it's a non-profit organization that pretty much promotes kidney disease awareness as well as organ donation. We also fundraise to be able to help kidney failure patients that are in need. So those are the two main focus of the Ia Foundation.
Okay. And Dr. Badu, you mentioned the cost, and that was one of the challenges that Ia was confronted with. What are we talking about in terms of costs when it comes to transplantation?
Well, in this country, you know, transplantation is very expensive. One is the hospital fee. The surgical cost is also a separate cost. And then post-surgery, you're dealing with the medication. So, you know, the actual cost could be anywhere between $50,000 to $100,000 for the transplantation process. And then after post-transplant, you're looking at another, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 of medications. So it is a very expensive process. But if you compare that to the quality of life and the difference you're going to make in somebody's life, it's definitely worth it.
And Ia, how did you handle your cost?
And for me, I had to do a lot of fundraising, and that's why I had to wait so long on dialysis, being on dialysis for 5 years before I could get my transplant. The hospital was willing to do my transplant on a charity care basis. But again, I was confronted with how I was going to pay for the post-transplant medications, the anti-rejection medications. They needed that I come up with at least $30,000. So I worked with my community, my church, my school at the time, and, you know, we had to carry out a lot of fundraising.
So, So you are reaching out to people through your foundation. Now, you say that there are two components to what you do. Tell us what kind of impact you've been able to do and you're hoping to do in the future.
So far, our organization has reached hundreds and thousands of people through our awareness campaigns. We do a series of different campaigns throughout the year that we educate people on kidney disease and organ donation. And we've been able to financially assist 10 patients in the diaspora, you know, who are kidney failure patients. And this year, we were able to extend our services back to Cameroon, where we were able to fund vascular surgery of at least 10 patients so far, for them to be able to get the vascular access, for them to be able to get dialysis treatment. So we look to do more of that because there's a long list of people that are suffering from kidney failure and that are fighting for their lives every day. So we try to reach out to people, not just to be able to take care of themselves, because early detection also saves lives, but would also want the public to become aware and support us in this cause, to be able to help those people who are in need, to give them a better quality of care, even after kidney failure.
Okay. Now, Dr. Badu, we have this question from Rania in Kenya. She says, is there a genetic link to kidney disease?
There is, and there's different diseases out there which are also genetic based. High blood pressure has some genetic basis to it. There's other type of glomerulonephritis, which is also genetic based. But I think the thing that we need to focus on is that, you know, everybody should see their physician at least once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. And when you do, as was mentioned, if you're able to be proactive and have your physician do a basic test, a basic blood test, that will let us know for sure if you're at risk or if you're not. There's also polycystic kidney disease, which is also genetic. But again, you know, polycystic kidney disease, that could be tested by, not necessarily by blood tests, by imaging studies like ultrasound. You know, but by seeing your physician and being upfront with your physician through your family history, he or she will be able to determine what your risk factors are and then proceed accordingly.
Okay. Now, quickly, the aftermath of kidney transplant, Dr. Badu, what does it take now to maintain that kidney in somebody else's body?
As was alluded to a little bit before by Ia, there is the immunosuppressive medications.
Okay.
And they vary from, you know, taking something like steroids. Mm-hmm. And other medicines like Celcept or Prograf. But basically, it's immunosuppressive, the list of immunosuppressive medications which the patient will have to take. And it's basically to try to keep in check your own immune disease or your immune...
Okay. So your immunity.
Immunity.
Yes. Okay. Now let's finish with Ia. Do you have a message you'd like to share, and also perhaps share your website so people have more information?
I would just like to say, emphasize what Dr. Badu was saying, for people to always do their annual checkup, whether it's once or twice a year. And if you suffer from diabetes or high blood pressure, to make sure to keep to doctor's order, manage your diabetes, manage your high blood pressure, and stay compliant with your health care. And also, you know, be proactive with your health. And visit our website at www.theiafoundation.org. We have a lot, you know, tons of information for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ia Bekondo, Dr. Andrew Badu. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
My name is Linor Mudu in Washington with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Health Chat. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.